Good afternoon to all. Huh? Today is raining, huh? So I think some of them are delayed. Huh? It's okay. We can start our puja first. Huh? Just maintain some form of attention. Huh? Relax body and mind. Then we can start. Huh? We may need to get the assistance of Sister Lee, huh? And her friend, yeah, to start the Heart Sutta Puja. Then after that, we will follow by our traditional Theravada Sutta, yeah, Sadhu. Yeah. Okay, you just compose yourself, then pay respect 3 times, eh? Then we can start.
南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨。波野婆罗蜜多心经，观自在菩萨行深波野婆罗蜜多时，召见无闻解空，度一切苦厄。舍利子，舍不异空，空不异舍，色即是空，空即是舍，受想行识皆不如是。舍利子是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触法，无眼界乃至无意之界，无无明意，无无明境，乃至无老死意，无老死性，无苦集灭道，无智意，无得意，无所得故，菩提萨埵依般苦婆罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，故有无恐怖，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃。三世诸佛依般苦婆罗蜜多故得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提，故知般苦婆罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚。故说般苦婆罗蜜多咒，即说昼夜揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu.
Okay, we will now continue with our Theravada traditional puja. Huh? We will recite the homage to the Buddha. Huh? Then followed by the 3 precepts, the 3 refuges, and the 5 precepts. Huh? Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami.Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. ตติยัมปิบุตังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิธัมมังสรณังกัจฉามิตติยัมปิสังฆังสรณังกัจฉามิปาณาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิอาทินาทานเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจฉาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรัยมัจจาปะมาทัตตนะเวรมณีสิกขาปะทังสมาทิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุOkay, pay homage to all the blessed one, the worthy one. Okay, very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Okay, we will start with the Heart Sutta. Today is our fifth lesson. We will go through the notes, then do a little bit of revision. We call it the recap. The first part is the recap of the previous lesson. We just run through it very fast.These are the short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the Heart Sutta as discussed at Wuping Jingse on the 4th of March 2012. And today is the 11th of March. We are going through the fifth lesson. Okay, the first item that we went through in the recap was emptiness or sunyata in Pali.This is a term frequently used in the Mahayana tradition. They like to use this word. They prefer emptiness to the usual Theravada equivalent term as anatta. Whereas the verse, the term non-self or not a permanent unchanging entity that can be cling on to as the I and the me,or anatta in Pali is the equivalent term that is frequently used in the Theravada tradition. So if you understand the Buddha Dharma, the Buddha's teaching, actually the two terms, the words may be different, but they are very similar in the profound wisdom. The Theravada equivalent is the word anatta.And anatta is very deep, the meaning. A lot of people don't understand. Like I explained last time, it's not only non-self. Anatta, the meaning is deeper, a lot deeper than non-self. Non-self is a small part of anatta. Empty nature is the other meaning. The other final, very important meaning is everything that you come to experience.Whether it's within the conditioned or unconditioned world, they are also anatta. Means all of phenomena, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, or the unconditioned, it is not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can grasp onto and hold onto and say, this is me, this is I, and because of that, this can be mine. So this is a very important understanding.If you have that understanding, then it's not much different from the profound terminology that Mahayana used, sunyata, emptiness. Emptiness is supposed to be the ultimate understanding of Buddhism, of the Buddha Dharma. But as the Buddha has taught, there are various levels of emptiness that you can come to experience. So when you fully understand the profound Prajnaparamita, which is the Heart Sutta, then you have absolute profound wisdom of Prajnaparamita. And you really truly understand the final understanding or the most profound level understanding of Sunyata, which is emptiness. Okay, we go on to the second recap. I emphasize on this importance of understanding why our physical body or our physical form and all of external form can sometimes be expressed as form is impermanent. The Buddha always say rupang anicchang, brings about suffering if we deludedly cling on to it. They say rupang can bring about dukkha, suffering. And to understand it clearly, we must have the ability to see its manifestation via mind's perception. So you recall, all of mental form, they enter the mind through your mental perception. So it's actually all of form manifests itself through your mental perception. Then with clear mindfulness, you are able to recognize them as condition arising phenomena. That's the reason why you have to train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful. That is, it is not a permanent, unchanging entity that we can try to cling on to or hold on to as the I and the me, or own as the mind. Hence, seeing them as empty, which is sunyata or anatta, because it has no apparent reality at all. Also, the cultivator needs to develop wisdom to understand why form is external manifestation of mind, especially your human form. All of the action and movement external, they are actually external manifestation of what your mind want to do. So that's why form is external manifestation of mind. You will come to see very clearly when you have developed the daily mindfulness via a clear and stable daily mindfulness cultivation. Then the third point is form delusion can be very powerful. Hence, if you can't see form, you can't see mind, because form is much grosser, whereas mind is very subtle. Hence, with wisdom born of direct seeing, form and mind delusion will cease to be, leading to the enlightenment in the here and the now. This is just a summary. Then I talk about definition of what a samana is. A samana is a renounced holy person in robe, seriously cultivating the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha. They are also usually referred to those who are already enlightened. The term is used as opposed to the other term. Before the Buddha, the more famous term is Brahmana. You heard of Brahmana, the Brahmins. The Brahmins are very, very respected. So they are called Brahmins. They are the ones who study the Hindu teaching, the Vedas, during the time of the Buddha Sakyamuni. To a samana, spiritual understanding is very important, because without spiritual understanding, one cannot be free. One cannot understand the problems and realities of life and existence. There is a recently printed Dhamma book for free distribution, and the title of the book is Samana, on the life of the late Long Ta Mahabhava. He just passed away not too long ago. Then, because our Kayanamita Fund has also donated, hence we are given some of this book for free distribution. Those who are interested in having a copy, you can make the request from me. I have given out three the other day, last week. So those who want, you let me know. Nah? Okay. In the recap, I re-emphasize on the following. The importance of understanding true emptiness is wonderful existence, leading to our ability to live life meaningfully and to the fullest. Then true blessings come from your own cultivation via karmic inheritance and nothing else. That is, it is not that you are lucky or what. A lot of people attribute to your good luck. Without the inheritance from what you have cultivated or developed in the past and this life, there can be no what they call blessings. So all this is not due to luck. People use the easy way out. Oh, you are very blessed, you are very lucky. It's nothing to do with luck. It's all your inheritance through karma. So this part you must bear in mind. The importance of cultivating a very stable sati or mindfulness leading to heedfulness or apamada throughout the day is very important. So this one I just recap for you the important pointers. Then the last important recap is importance of repentance and asking for forgiveness sincerely. When you forgive someone, you free yourself from the evil roots of anger and hatred. Just now there's a sister who came and see me. She said she came to realize that in the past it was not so good because she has been holding on to this negative thought. I think something to do with her mother, some misunderstanding must have happened. Then she said, "Bratio, what must I do?" I said, "Don't worry, it's very simple when you understand. It is not you who think negatively or evilly. It is conditioned by your ignorance, your delusion, and your evil roots. When you have the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they make you very evil. That's how it conditions you to be negative. That's how it develops all the hatred, the anger, the emotion, the unhappiness, and all these things." So I told her, "Now that you understand, it's very simple. You can ask for forgiveness and repent, seriously repent. Then from here, when the understanding comes, the evil root will cease to be. When the evil root ceases to be, your mind is free." Understand? Like I said, when you forgive, you free yourself. That's why when you understand, your heart is incapable of negativity anymore. You keep to the Four Noble Truths, cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then you arise the four right effort to abandon the wrong thought, the unwholesome thought, the negative thought. And later on with the wisdom, you can prevent it from arising. So this is how you can develop that understanding. Okay, then last Sunday, I think there are some of you who don't have this book, which I mentioned. Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha is a very good book. I will give to Sister Lee. If you need, you collect from her. Okay. Yeah, Sister Lee, I pass to you some more. You all can request from her. Okay. If you can, you go back and read through this. Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. A compilation of email written by me to various Buddhist group and Dhamma friends. It's a very good book. You read through, it will help you. Then next Sunday, I will try to do a review. Then you will understand. Because if you don't understand this, a lot of the Buddha's teaching you cannot connect. It is a very important, what they call, understanding. When you have them, it makes your cultivation very much easier. Okay. Then we went into part two. Part two, the Heart Sutta, lesson four. we cover introduction page 10 and 12 of Master Xuan Hua's commentary. So we started with Master Xuan Hua's very unique birth and life history. So as stated by Master Xuan Hua in his book, he said, on Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's birthday, the master dreamt that an old lady wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appear to guide him, and so on. So this unique birth and life history of Master Xuan Hua provided a condition for me to share a bit of my unique spiritual affinity and encounter with Kuan Yin Bodhisattva in his early days, in my early days, or early years. And the details are as described by me during the sharing on that day. For detail, please refer to the web link that has been that has the recording as done by Brother Sui An. You wait for the web link. I think his unified was fried. So you have to be patient a bit. So I think it should be coming. Okay, then I mentioned in 1986, that was about 26 years ago, Brother and his whole family took refuge under Master Xuan Hua. And apart from taking the five precepts, the other condition is to finish off the 10,000 bow of reciting homage to thee, my original teacher, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, in Mandarin. The one he teaches is in Mandarin. Namo Bensi Sijiamuni Po, like what Sister Lee has chanted just now when we started the puja. Within 3 months, which I completed in less than 2 months, then I found this bowing very, very useful. That's why I mentioned, if done mindfully and with a very strong sadha or faith and the virya or spiritual zeal, it can lead to a very stable daily mindfulness very quickly. If you do it with a lot of sincerity, a lot of faith and virya, your daily mindfulness will develop. Okay, then after that, there were some good questions. The first question is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness that is similar to walking and sitting meditation? Then I answered, the understanding of it is very important. There is not much meaning to your cultivation if you just follow instruction without understanding. You must understand why you bow and what you are doing in the name of meditation. That is, do not just follow instruction to do certain things via any method or technique, etc., thinking that when you are doing all that, then you are meditating. Actual meditation, as taught by the Buddha, cannot begin unless you have developed the training of the mind to be heedful with sati or mindfulness within. The various objects of meditation used in conjunction with the various methods and techniques are only initial skillful means used to train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought most of the time. The main purpose of the object of meditation is to anchor the mind to it so that it is always within the moment, mindful and aware of the object of meditation without thought. Once this training is done, then the trained mind is silent but with inner awareness. And such a mind is in the meditative state of silent inner awareness to see things as they are without any concept, idea or words. That's why it's the silent mind, no chattering, nothing. When the above is understood, then any method or technique can also be used to train the mind to be heedful initially. But finally, to develop the ultimate meditative state or mind in silent inner awareness, where the mind must have no dwelling as per the Diamond Sutta, then one must let go of the meditation object and silence one's mind to develop the more refined mindfulness within. It is just like swimming. The float is just like an initial skillful means or object of meditation to help keep one afloat. And as long as one still hold on to the float, then one will never understand the actual swimming. Because to swim with the float and without the float are two totally different things. So you have to understand all of the initial skillful means that you make use of, your method, your technique. Finally, you have to drop them. Otherwise, you cannot develop the real sati, the real mindfulness, the real silent mind. Bowing is one of the 10 meritorious actions, and it is very important. And it is a very important virtue that comes with so many benefits and advantages. It is part of the opening and closing puja or devotional practices as recommended by the Buddha to help us establish our faith or sadha in the Buddha and his teaching, followed by the spiritual zeal or virya, and the development of sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. If we were to do the bowing mindfully and with understanding, we are a composed mind with strong sadha and virya. Bowing is not idol worshipping, but instead it is reverential salutation, done out of great respect and gratitude towards the Buddha or towards someone who had taught us so well, like the Buddha, who is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. Since it's a meritorious action, the field of merit is immeasurable if it's done with understanding to the worthy or enlightened one. Such merits can be made use of to arise the causes and conditions for us to progress quickly along the path of Dhamma via invocation of the power of merits. That is, you do your aspiration, you make your aspiration. By the power of all these merits, may such and such a thing comes to be. Okay, then I continue. Apart from helping us to develop the spiritual faculty of sadha, virya and sati, bowing can also help us to cultivate what we call humility and help exercise our body while establishing ourselves in mindfulness training. Also, according to the Buddha, four things grow if we pay respect sincerely to our elders and worthy ones. They are ayu, wana, sukang, palang. The meaning is, ayu is long life, wana is fair complexion, sukang is happiness or joy, and palang is strength, both your spiritual and physical strength. All these four blessings are very important to the living being, to life. Then after that, there is another question. Can you show us how to do the bowing? Is it the Theravada tradition's 5-point posture? Excuse me. Is it the traditional Theravada 5-point prostration or the Mahayana way of standing up, then going down to prostrate and come up again? So this was the question. So I answered. Whichever way that suits you more, use it. Okay? It can be either. The more important thing is, when you bow, do it mindfully with the very strong sadha or faith and virya. And do it with proper understanding. Always remember, one can only do one thing at a time. That is, either you are mindful with the moment in silent awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought, hence heedless. Bowing mindfully means body and mind move as one in harmony without thought. When the mind is composed without the five hindrances of mind, mindfulness will be there. So develop the faith compose the mind, then chant the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha, then bow mindfully. To develop the sati or mindfulness within. After a while, and if you are sincere, and you do it with understanding, and you are patient, then it can bring about the condition for sati or mindfulness to arise. Mindfulness comes along through understanding and perseverance. And when mindfulness is established, there will be so much joy. The mind is so light, so silent, so composed, so still, yet full of awareness within throughout the day. Every movement and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are. And direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising. Things that were there all this while, like its three characteristics of nature, the universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state and non-self, anicchang, dukkang and anatta, which the normal living being never see, suddenly becomes clear. Reason why, one of my teachers, I got one teacher who taught me the Dhamma very well. She always tell me this. Truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. And this is a very beautiful saying. You should reflect on it. It will help you a lot. Can you understand? Truth means what? Truth is the reality, correct or not? Anything that can explain the way things are is the truth. Yeah. That's why the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state and non-self, this is one of the very important truth. And in the midst of life and nature, all of phenomena, physical, mental and nature's phenomena, they exhibit this truth. So that's why my teacher said, truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? And for those who see, they always see. Every moment, every instant is all the time there. So this is for you to reflect and contemplate. Okay, then the last question is, there are two more. The third question is, are the teachings of all the great three Buddhist traditions of the Theravada, Mahayana and Vajrayana all the same, or are they different? The answer is, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, like the Four Noble Truths, which include the Noble Eightfold Path, are essentially all the same for all the traditions, the three traditions. It is only the way they approach it appear to be very different, because different suttas, words and terminology are being used, and this complicates the matter further, as words are subject to various interpretations. What is more important is not to argue and create any unnecessary division and misunderstanding within the various traditions, but instead, have an open mind and avoid all negativity, and only make use of whatever that is relevant and suitable for each of us to progress along the path of Dhamma, following the Buddha's advice to the Kalamas, as stated by him in his Kalama Sutta. The advice of the Buddha is very simple. He told the Kalamas, whatever that people teach you, you check. If it does not harm you, does not harm others, then no harm trying. If it's the truth, it stand up to investigation. Harmony, love and understanding, following the Noble Eightfold Path to resolve all issues amicably, is very important. When you use this, you don't have any negativity. Okay, the fourth question. This one is a very useful question. Can you explain the difference between Pure Land teaching that talks about the Western paradise, as opposed to Nibbana as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha? The answer is, Pure Land teaching is based on Amitabha Buddha's great vow, which created the Pure Land, also called the Western paradise, for those disciples or cultivators who have the affinity with him to continue with their cultivation of perfection. By virtue of Amitabha Buddha and all the other great bodhisattva like Kuan Yin and Manjushri, etc., great cultivation, their vows are so powerful because their wisdom and perfection are able to allow their great vow to become like integrated with the nature's law, thereby enabling their vow to have very special effect to create such pure land and help cultivators or their disciples who have affinity with them and who knows how to connect directly to their vow without them having to be there or all over the places. That's why for those who cannot understand, they say, Kuan Yin is alone. How can she help so many? Ah, possible. She don't have to really track you. She transformed her vow into nature's law. So if you sincerely connect, there will be a response. Even you chant her name, her forehao. If you do it sincerely and mindfully, there will be a response. It will connect and protect you. Even her mantra, Om Pe Mi Me Mi Hum. All these are very powerful and very useful. Okay, the other aspect is this Pure Land or the Western Paradise is in the heart of those who had developed the cultivation and have the ability to connect directly to Amitabha's vow. Their silent mind with very strong faith while chanting Amitabha's name or mantra. They will be able to chant until there is no one chanting. There is the vibration and the mind has become one in perfect harmony and synchrony. That's why for those who cultivate the Pure Land, a lot of people misunderstand. They actually make a very serious, what they call, miscomment. You know what they used to tell me last time during the early days? I used to hear them in the temple. That's why if you don't really understand, please refrain from making such comment. They said, Pure Land only teach chanting. You chant and chant and chant. There is no Noble Eightfold Path. How can they free? It sounds very logical, isn't it? Correct or not? But you must understand the Pure Land teaching is so profound and the chanting is to develop the training of the mind. Because of the special vow, the moment is connected, everything comes to be and it can be very, very fantastic and potent. That's why you don't understand the great vow of Amitabha Buddha, the great vow of Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. They are very powerful. So do not comment anything if you are not sure. Have an open mind. Make use of whatever that can help you and move. Avoid negativity. This is very important. Then the last part is the Pure Land or the Western Paradise is not within the 31 plane of existence as taught by the Buddha Sakyamuni. Then there is a last question. One lady asked, Virtue, what are these 31 planes of existence? I didn't know so many of you don't understand this. The Buddha talked about this actually. According to the Theravada tradition, the whole universe, the Buddha subdivide into 31 planes of existence or rhymes within samsara or the existential world where living beings have to undergo birth and death following their karma. It can also be called the three worlds. Mahayana always call them the three worlds. The first one is the formless world, arupa loka. There are four rhymes. They have the rhymes of neither perception nor non-perception, the rhyme of nothingness, the rhyme of infinite consciousness, and the rhyme of infinite space. If you develop your training of the mind and develop the formless jhanas, you will reach this state. Then when you pass away, chances are you will take birth there. And these beings, they live very, very long, very, very long. Many, many world cycles. The second one is Rupa Loka, or the form world. This one, there are 16 Brahmarine. They are within the form world. If you cultivate the jhanas, the four jhanas, you will take birth there. Then the last one is called the sensual world, or Karma Loka. Karma Loka, according to the Buddha, you have 6 deva planes, or heavenly realm. There's 1 human realm, and the 4 woeful state, or the suffering realm. I had already explained last week. So the sensual realm are further divided into the suffering world of the sensual realm, or karma dukkati. These are the 4 woeful state. They are the realm of the demons, the animals, the petas, or the hungry ghosts, and the hell being. Then you have what they call the sensual realm of happiness, kama sukati. This one constitutes 1 human realm and the 6 deva realms. So you combine them together, there are 31 planes of existence. Whereas the Mahayana call it the 6 realm of birth and death, liu dao lun hui, with the 1 human realm and the 4 woeful state remaining exactly the same. The only difference is the Mahayana has 1 heavenly realm to define all the 6 deva realm, the 16 Brahma realm, and the 4 formless realm. Hence, you add them all together, there is 31 realms or plane of existence. Then I put a note. You have to pay attention to this note. When you don't have a thought, no thought, ever mindful and constantly meditative, it implies constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. You have heedfulness. Okay, we finished the notes. Okay, now we can go on to continue. Okay, Sister Lee also has given you 1 photostat sheet on Dhammapada verse 60. This one you go back and read yourself, because this was the email that I sent out. It so happened the next day I saw this Dhammapada verse email, and it was related to the hell rhyme, how people suffer, how the Buddha gave the analogy. How when I mentioned the Buddha gave an analogy, he said, if there is a convict, he spear him 100 times, 3 times a day, morning, afternoon, and night. And let's say he doesn't die. That convict suffer a lot, isn't it? But the Buddha said the suffering of this convict is nothing compared to the suffering in hell. So this Dhammapada verse really confirms it. I can read to you. Especially the last page. The second last page. Second last page. The note there. In Dhammapada verse 60 above, we read about King Pasanandi being obsessed with sexual desire for another man's wife, could not sleep, and at about midnight, he heard some eerie sound. The sound he was Tusa Naso. Lord Buddha explained to the king that they were the doleful voice of 4 men from Benares, Nasir, suffering in the Luhakubi Narada, Naraya is actually hell. So the Buddha was so wise, he can know. He can even know from which hell they come from. The Lord said that they were the son of rich people, or rich men, during the time of Kassapa Buddha. You know who is Kassapa Buddha or not? Kassapa Buddha is the Buddha before Sakyamuni Buddha in our this world cycle. And that now they were suffering in this hell, Loha Kubumi. Because they had committed sexual misconduct with other people's wine. So according to this Majjhika Nikaya 130, the Deva Dutta Sutta, next the wardens of hell take him feet up, head down, and plunge him into red hot metal cauldron, burning, blazing, and glowing. He is cooked there in a swirl of frost. And as he is being cooked, there is a swirl of frost. He is swept now up, now down, and now across. There he feels pain, racking, piercing feelings. Yet he does not die so long as the evil action has not been exhausted. It took the four men from this Bharatanasi, who were suffering in this hell 30,000 years to be swept slowly in the swirl of frost of red metal hot to reach the bottom of the cauldron, and another 30,000 years to be slowly swept up to the surface, where they could see each other for a fleeting moment. Each one wanted to speak a verse, but before they could get past the first syllables, they were sucked down again. The four words that the four men would like to speak in Pali were Tusa Naso. Then there is an explanation. You read the explanation, you will know. That's why don't play a fool with karma. Suffering in hell is really, really very traumatic. The four words that they want to speak according to the Buddha are, these are in Pali. The translation is, although we have great wealth, we did not give anything to other people. We did not do meritorious deed that would have been our island of refuge. Instead, we had lived an evil life. See? Never do that. Because whatever you have, you cannot take along. Do not be deluded. Then the second guy said, we have been suffering in this hell for 60,000 years. Without respite, we had suffered. When will we finish our suffering? That's why the Buddha got one Dhammapada saying also. When you suffer in hell, like it's very long, never pass. Then the third guy, he said, oh friend, for the evil things we had done, the suffering had no end for you and me. When will it end? There is no end in sight for us. That's why the suffering is so bad, so miserable. Then the last one is the best. The last one said, when I am released from this hell, you know what he want to do? And if I were to be reborn as a human being, I will listen to the wise one, observe precept, sila, the spelling is wrong, sila, and will do a lot of meritorious actions. See, now he realized, very important, keeping to the precept, doing all the meritorious deeds, and only listen to the wise and enlightened one. So that is what that sutta is all about. So do give it a thought. Never allow yourself to fall into hell. Keep your precept, avoid all evil. Cultivate, train your mind. Then also your loved ones. You have condition, you should help them. Okay, now we continue with our heart sutta. Okay. Turn to page 13. We were at page 13. First paragraph. We continue. After he stay in the mountain, the master, which is Xuan Hua, returned to the three condition mountain, where he worked tirelessly for the propagation of Dhamma, and where he helped the venerable master Zhang Zi and Zhang Ren to greatly expand the monastery. During those years, he visited many of the local Buddhist monasteries, attended intensive meditation and recital sessions, and walked many miles to listen to lectures and sutta. In addition to lecturing on the sutta himself, he visited various non-Buddhist religious establishments and learned thoroughly about their belief too. Then in 1946, the master made a pilgrimage to Putaosan. This one is one of the four famous Shenti. Shenti means the mountain where the enlightened Bodhisattva are noted to be staying there. They call it the Si Da Ming San, or the Four Holy Mountain. Shenti, Si Da Shenti. Where he received the complete precepts of the Bhikkhu in 1947. Then in 1948, after 3,000 miles of travel, he reached Nanhua Monastery near Canton and bowed before the Venerable Master Xu Yun. This is Xu Yun Lao He Sang, you know. He passed away at the age of 120 years old. He is also the teacher of your late teacher, Po Yan Zhang Lao. This is the famous Xu Yun. The 44th patriarch in the line of succession from Sakyamuni Buddha. So if you go by patriarchship, since Sakyamuni Buddha, they hand the patriarchship down. And Bodhidharma was the one who took it over to China. Then from China it continued until Master Xu Yun. He is the 44th. At that first meeting, the Venerable Master Yun, who was then 109 years old, he lived until 120, recognized the Master as a worthy vessel of the Dharma, one capable of his propagation, and he sealed and certified the Master's spiritual skill and transmit to him the wonderful mind-to-mind seal of all Buddhas. Thus the Master became the 45th generation in the line descending from Sakyamuni Buddha, the 19th generation in China from Bodhidharma, Da Mo Zhu Si, and the 9th generation of the Weiyang lineage. The Venerable Yun later sent to the Master document entitled The Treasury of the Orthodox Dharma Eye, the Source of Buddhas and Patriarchs, the document bearing the seal of Yunju Monastery and of the Venerable Yun, and served as public certification of the Dhamma transmission. In 1950, the Master resigned his post of Director of the Nanhua Institute for the study of the Vinaya. You know what is Vinaya? The monk's rules. These are Vinaya. At Nanhua Monastery, and journeyed to Hong Kong. There he lived in the mountainside cave in the New Territory until the large influx of Sangha members fleeting the mainland China required his help to establish new monastery and temple. He himself established two temples and a lecture hall and helped bring about the construction of many others. He dwelt in Hong Kong for 12 years. During that time, thousands were influenced by his arduous cultivation and awesome manner to take refuge with the Triple Gem, to cultivate the Dhammadhara of reciting the Buddha's name, and to support the propagation of Buddha Dharma. The Master sponsored the carving of many holy images and printing of sutras, and he conducted meditation and recital sessions and lecture on the Dhamma. His great compassion Dharma of healing continued to relieve the suffering of many. Then in 1962, the master carried the Buddha Dharma further west to the shore of America. This was how Wan Po Chen, the city of 10,000 Buddhas, come to be. Where he took up residence in San Francisco, sat in meditation and waited for past cause to ripen and bear their fruits. In the beginning of the year 1968, the master declared that the flower of Buddhism would blossom that year with 5 petals. In June, the master began a 96 days Dhamma assembly on the Surangama Sutta, Leng Yan Jing. And 5 of the American disciples attending left the home life and became Bhikshu and Bhikshuni under the master's guidance. During the ensuing decade, hundreds of people have left the home life in America under the master's guidance. Since 1968, the master has delivered complete commentary of the Heart Sutra, Diamond Sutta or Vajra, 6 Patriarchs Platform Sutta, Amitabha Sutta, Sutta of the Dharani Sutta, Dharma Flower, Lotus Sutta, Suttas in 42 sections, Samanera Vinaya and others. Then in June 1971, he began. And in October 1979, he completed an 8-year lecture series on the Avatamsaka Sutta. This is a very famous sutta. I think it's Hua Yan Jing, if I'm not wrong. The Sutta on the Dhammarine. These texts, together with the Master's commentary, have been translated in English and many Western languages by the Buddhist Text Translation Society, supported by the Dhammarine Buddhist Association. More than 30 volumes has already been published and many others are in preparation. In 1971, the Master established Gold Mountain Monastery in San Francisco as a place of practice of the Orthodox Buddha Dharma. The Master has made a vow that wherever he go, the proper Dharma will prevail and the Dharma ending age will not appear. The Gold Mountain Doctrine expressed the force of this vow. So this one is his famous vow. We just read through, because these are all life history. We should end soon. Another 2 pages. Freezing, we do not scheme. Starving, we do not beg. Dying of poverty, we ask for nothing. We accord with condition. This is most important. We accord with condition. Means you flow with the Dhamma, but do not change. We do not change in accordance with condition, but we accord. These are our 3 great principles. We renounce our life to be the Buddha's work, to do the Buddha's work. We shape our life to create the ability to make revolution in the Sangha order. In our action, we understand the principle, so that our principles are revealed in our action. We carry out the pulse of the patriarch's mind to mind seal. So the vow was very good. In 1976, the master established the city of 10,000 Buddha. This one is a very famous one. Wan Po Chen, a 420 acres campus with 6 major buildings of wonderful enlightenment mountain near Ukiah, California, 110 miles north of San Francisco. At the city of 10,000 Buddhas are the Tathagata monastery for monks and great joyous giving house for nuns, the house of 10,000 Buddhas and Dhammarine Buddhist University, which was founded in 1977. Also at the city of 10,000 Buddhas are instilling the Virtue Elementary School, Cultivating Virtue Secondary School, and the city of 10,000 Buddhas Acupuncture Clinic, and plans are made for a home for the aged, an institute for the study of Eastern and Western medicine, a world religion center, and other social and educational services. The cities offer all sincere students and cultivators a great variety of doors through which to enter into their own inherent wisdom in order to benefit themselves and all beings. Already in America, thousands of people have taken refuge with the Triple Gem and have bowed to the Master as their teacher. The Master has vowed that as long as a single one of his disciples has not become a Buddha, he will not become a Buddha. He will wait. Meanwhile, in return, he daily turns the Dharma wheel and uses every opportunity to teach and transform living beings. So he always pleads to us all as his disciple because of his very heavy vow. He said, if you are not hardworking, you will make the teacher suffer. The teacher cannot move, he said. The vow is each and every of his students must become Buddhas. Then only he decides to be a Buddha. So he always say, 不要连累他. So this part is good. So we go through the poem, then we finish introduction one. Ice in the sky, snow on the ground. Tiny creature beyond number die in the cold, or sleep in hibernation. Contemplate in the midst of stillness. Investigate in the midst of movement. When you wrestle with dragon and subdue tiger in constant sport, ghost cry and spirit wail in strange magical transformation. The meaning of what is truly real is severed from words. This one is very beautiful. The meaning of what is truly real is severed from words because the truth is beyond words, beyond thought. It cannot be thought of. You should go forward quickly. With the great and the small destroyed, with no inside and no outside, every mode of dust contain the entire Dharma rhyme. This is very profound. Complete, whole and perfectly fused, interpenetrating without obstruction. With two clenched fists, shatter the cover of empty space, swallow in one mouthful the source of the ocean of Buddha land. With kindness and compassion, rescue all, spare neither blood nor sweat, and never pause to rest. So this is his poem. He really, really very enduring, very full of love and compassion. He wants to do the great work of a Buddha. Okay, we finish. This today one is about his biography actually, and he already summarized quite a lot, because even the city of 10,000 Buddha, you read the actual text, there is a lot of miracle happening. That place nobody want, you know why? They cannot find water. Then funny, Master Xuan Hong went there. He somehow communicated with the non-human there. Then the dragon came and told him, there are water, you can buy this place. That's why he asked the disciple buy. After they bought, they really found water. Until today, a lot of water. But they had to sink into the well, quite deep. But there really was a lot of water. Anyway, not important. Okay, you got any question? So far? If you don't have, we can continue. We still have 20 minutes. Okay, you turn to introduction 2. The heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta strike the keynote of philosophy of emptiness. This is very important. The philosophy of the emptiness school of Mahayana Buddhism. Like the sword of the Diamond King. Diamond Sutta is famous for the Vajra sword. It cuts through the veneer of the experience world, deep into the core of the true mind, the cosmic consciousness that lies beyond everything, phenomena and nirvana in the universe. That's why the ultimate connecting consciousness is the cosmic consciousness, or they call it the universal consciousness. Understand now? Means the summation of all consciousness in this universe. So the Vajra or the teaching is so profound, they compare it with this So the heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta strikes the keynote of the philosophy of the emptiness school of Mahayana. So he gave analogy like the Vajra sword. Okay, we move on. As Mahayana Buddhism teaches the phenomenal world. You know what is a phenomenal world? You know what is a phenomenon? Anything perceivable by your mind is a phenomenon. Understand? Any movement, any action, or anything that you can come to perceive is a phenomenon. So he said, as the Mahayana Buddhism teach, the phenomenal world, including every animate and inanimate, is nothing else than an illusionary projection of the true mind. This is very profound. You understand this or not? The phenomenal world. You can understand that? Why is it a projection of your true mind? What is your true mind? Why did he say it's a phenomenal world? I may have to use the whiteboard. Okay. You see, how do you come to know the world? Through what? Through what? Through your mind, isn't it? Your thinking mind, isn't it? And that is not your true mind, understand? That is your mundane mind. That is your thinking mind. So Mahayana say our world is a world of phenomenal world, condition arising world. Just now, how did I define what is a phenomena? What is a phenomena? Anything that your mind can perceive is a phenomena. Means any perception that you arise, like a movement, you can perceive it. This sound, the fan, you can perceive it. It's a phenomena. Understand now? My hand movement is a phenomena. That's why all the vibration of nature, everything that you come to see, hear, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think, they are phenomena because of the mind. Understand? You start to perceive them. So the world is the world. If your mind does not stir to arise the five aggregate of form and mind, there is no phenomena. Understand? But because you stir, and the aggregate come to be. That's why the Mahayana Sutta is very powerful. He mentioned here very clearly, like how Master Xuanhua tried to explain to you. He said, as Mahayana Buddhism teaches, the phenomenal world, including every animate and inanimate, is nothing else than what? Illusionary projection of the true mind. See? The true mind never stir, understand? But the mundane mind stir. That's why it's an illusionary projection. It's only an image up here. It's not what you think. So this part is very important. Then after that, they continue. The moving spirit behind the operation of the universe, the transformation of the myriad things, and the transformation of all the species of life. To elucidate this point, we must compare the true mind to the mental state of a person who is wide awake. Excessive mental activities such as momentary impulse, instinctive desire, and stream of thought then lure him into a wild dream in which he finds himself in a vast illusionary space, illuminated by the sun and moon, and start with myriads, planets and stars. In such a way, the phenomenal world came into existence from nowhere. The land, the water, and all the species of life, including his dream body and dream mind. This is your mundane form and mind, dream body and dream mind, appear to him as real and intangible, as in real existence. So that's why the teaching is very profound. This is how they start. when your mind do not understand how you create through thought, through the mundane mind, then you cannot understand the phenomenal world, the illusionary world that your mind create and project. It's only a thought, it's only an image, it's only a consciousness. That's why we call it the world of consciousness. You know what is the meaning or not? Eh? The phenomenal world is the world of consciousness. World of consciousness. Because without consciousness, there is nothing. Because we have mind, we have the thinking mind, the mundane mind. So you create through your mind, and that's how you stir. That's why it's illusionary, it's a projection. Then the other aspect of the Mahayana teaching is very interesting. You have to listen to this. Phenomenal world is the world of consciousness, isn't it? Because through your mind, you become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, correct or not? So that's why the phenomenal world is actually a world of consciousness. Without the senses, without the consciousness, there is nothing. Okay? So what happened? Shenhua said, consciousness create the land, the planet, the moon, the universe. The world of consciousness is actually what your mind creates through your seeing. You see everything as so real. Understand that? So the phenomenal world come about through consciousness. That's why the planet, the star, the land and the continent, the earth, and everything that you come to know in this life, they are all the result of your mental consciousness. Understand that? So what is happening is consciousness created the world and the stars and the universe. Then what happened? The knower becomes what? No, the knower becomes the living being. Understand? Because you cling on to this one. You deludedly cling. What is this living being? Your form and mind. Understand? You cling on to this. You become what? The traveler in time. What is this guy? Who is traveling? Who is traveling? Your karmic form and mind, is it? Through karma, is it? That's why in samsara, unending. You come and you go, you come and you go, born and die, born and die. Understand? So consciousness created the world and the universe. The knower become the living being. You become a traveler in time. Understand? Through space and time. This is the delusion. Because you cling on to the false. This karmic body and mind, thinking that it's real. That's why you got Sakaya Ditti. That's why you can have karmic suffering. Because you don't understand the Dhamma, the Buddha Dhamma. You don't know how to live your life in accordance with the teachings of the Buddha. You don't understand the spiritual law that governs all of life and existence. You never believe the karma. That's why you dare to be heedless. You dare to use this wrongly. So this part is very profound. You try to develop the understanding. I will read through slowly. Then Shenhua said, deluded and puzzled,
He is not aware that the illusionary body and mind and the universe as well are mirage conjured by the excessive activity of his true mind. Your true mind, this nature, doesn't stir. Understand? No? It is always there. Zuzu. You know what is zuzu? Suchness. That's why it's always like that. The oneness, suchness. There is nothing. Because of delusion, you stir. You grasp at the thought it creates. You think it's you. You think it's real. Then you forgot your source. You forgot who you are and what you are. That's why you lost yourself. That's why Shenhua said, deluded and puzzled. He is not aware that the illusionary body and mind, which is your fire aggregate, your karmic body and mind, and the universe as well, are the mirage conjured up by the excessive activity of the true mind, your true nature, or the Buddha nature, which tends to duplicate itself in the form of projection, although it never undergo any change itself. See? Zuzu. Understand or not? Suchness. That true nature cannot come out. Never stir. Never change. The same is true of the moon. This moon one is a very good analogy, which is reflected clearly in the numerous body of water on earth. Although it is high up in the sky, far beyond the reach of all the water. But you believe, isn't it? The reflection of the moon in the water, you believe or not? Maybe you learn science, you say, this is a reflection, this is not the real moon. I ask you to go back tonight. You go to your toilet. There's a mirror there. When you are outside, you see, you know it's a reflection, isn't it? Today you go back, you put your head very near, beyond the frame. Then you look inside. Everything you see is so real. You don't believe you go and see. When your head is there, it's so real. Because everything is reflected, even though it's laterally inverted. Because the frame, you see the frame, then your mind tell you it's a reflection, it's not real. But if you don't see the frame, let's say suddenly you put somebody there, then ask him to open the eye. He would think it's real, what he see inside there, very real. This is exactly the same. During the time of the Buddha, ancient time, when they see the reflection of the moon, it appears so real because the water is so still. Understand not? They say, you can see the star, the moon. But they are all reflection. And there are so many of these reflections all over. Understand not? That's why your true mind has the same capability, reflect through consciousness everywhere, all the living being. Understand? And you go and chase after this reflection of the moon, thinking that it's real. And that's where you cannot awaken. You cannot wake up. You constantly get into trouble. So the Heart Sutta is very profound. Okay, we move on. Misled by the hallucinatory mirage. See, he used the word hallucinatory. What is a hallucination? When you hallucinate, means what? You think it's real, but it's not real, isn't it? The dreamer mistake the false for the real and content himself with an endless transmigration in the sixth rhyme. Now you know what the sixth rhyme is, eh? Liu Tao Lun Hui, the 31 plane of existence. You know what is transmigration or not? Birth and death. So the sixth rhyme is the Mahayana sixth rhyme of birth and death. It's the 31 plane of existence within the framework of time and space. That's why just I said, the knower becomes the human being. He is the traveler in time. Like a castle in the air, the illusionary body and mind, together with the dreamer's environment, come from nowhere, and therefore has no place to go, because they are dream work. When viewed from the standpoint of the true mind. Which when you already awaken, enlightened, you realize this is all illusionary, delusion. That's why they grab at the wrong thing. It follows that life and death of all sentient beings and the coalition and dispersion of the universe do not affect the true mind or the Buddha nature, because a wild stream does not add or subtract anything from the dreamer. Understand? No matter whether he is awake or asleep. Therefore, the Sutta of Complete Enlightenment says, life and death, as well as Nirvana, are like the empty dream of yesterday. Understand? They are not what you think. As the Heart Sutta relates, Avalokitesvara Bodhisattva, through constant cultivation or practice of the profound Prajna Paramita, has seen through life and experienced world, and the experienced world, which appear to him as insubstantial and unreal, as the reflection of a flower in the mirror, or the projection of the moon on the water. Hence the Heart Sutta said, when Avalokitesvara Bodhisattva was cultivating the profound Prajna Paramita, he illuminated the five skandhas, or the five aggregates. What did he find? And saw that they are all what? They are all what? It's in the book. Empty. And he crossed beyond all suffering. That's why, 照见五蕴皆空, understand? He illuminate on them and realize profoundly that they are all empty, illusion. That's why don't grasp and don't cling. Understand that they are karmically conditioned out for you to use, understand? And you must have wisdom. The user of thought, the user of this form and mind, you must have wisdom. If you don't have wisdom, you suffer. Through delusion, you cause a lot of karmic negativity. Through wisdom, you free your mind, and life become meaningful. And through wisdom, not only you free your mind, you create great karmic inheritance, wonderful karmic inheritance, and great spiritual perfection. That's why every life you come, you inherit them all. And life becomes so different, so meaningful, and so beautiful. Not only you don't have to suffer, you can become such a great being. You can become a blessing not only to all. You can be a great blessing to yourself and all those who have affinity with you. And life becomes so different, so beautiful, so meaningful. And there is so much joy. Then you can do what you want, because you know the secret of life. You know how to come, you know how to go, you know how to return. And you know this form and mind is not you. That's why it's beautiful. Can use it to live, and yet don't have to worry about it. Understand? That's why the beauty comes from this understanding, the wisdom. I can use this form and mind so beautifully, yet I don't have to worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. I don't have to arise any fear, worry, anxiety. I can just become a perfect living being. Through that wisdom that you develop through the cultivation of the Heart of the Prajna Paramita Sutta. Means the Heart Sutta. Okay, we go on. The five khandhas are nothing else than our mental and physical activity and reaction, which causes endless anxiety, distress, and trouble to the experiencer. Who is this experiencer? Your form and mind. Understand? There is no person there to experience anything. It's through delusion. You cling on to the form and mind. You think you experience. That's why you say you suffer. You think the feeling is you. That's why you feel uncomfortable. You feel unhappy and all those things. So this one, you have to really cultivate and develop the wisdom and understand it deeply, profoundly. Okay, we continue. So long as he remains alive, see? As long as you are deluded and you are still alive, you will suffer. Eh? Constant practice of Prajna Paramita Sutta, of the profound Prajna Paramita Sutta, develop transcendental wisdom. Ah, see? In the experiencer, anasana, means you are connected to that nature. The nature that sitting as they are have the wisdom. So that he is able to perceive everything in its totality. Then there is no distinction between the experiencer and the experience. Understand? Actually, there is no experiencer. It's just the experience, the phenomena. Understand? That's why there is no observer and the observed. Understand? The observer and the observed is one. It's just that thing. There is no one to see. That's why the Buddha is also very wise. He always tells the monk, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. In the hearing is only the hearing consciousness, no one to hear. That's why when you see things as they are, the mind becomes very clear. It is just like that. Suchness. The easiness of things. Okay, we go on a bit. Then maybe we can stop. About 4:30 already. Then there is no distinction between the experiencer and the experience, the phenomena and the noumena, metal and mind, form and emptiness. Thus the sutta said, Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. Viewed from the standpoint of totality, a person's body and mind are actual various projections of the true mind. Therefore, there is no sense of his attaching to importance, any importance to his physical and mental activity and reaction. The five skandhas which constitute the source of all worry and trouble. Having awakened to the futility of life, he is free from all worldly worries and attachment, thus crossing beyond all suffering and difficulty. This one is very, very beautiful. Okay, I think I finish off until the next page. Better. What is meant by Prajna Paramita? Prajna is wisdom. He said intuitive wisdom. Prajna awaken or realize is Paramita. Paramita actually is perfection. You have perfected it. Means after you realize, it becomes paramitas, which means reaching the other shore. Intuitive wisdom transcends all the dialects and analytical process of reasoning. Characterize or characteristics of our discriminating mind. You know what is your discriminating mind or not? The mind that discriminate. Fenbiesing. Who discriminate? Your thought, your thinking mind. Without thought, you don't discriminate. You know why? Thought divide. Thought create. Understand? Good and bad, right and wrong. All the race. One word, divide. That's why it discriminates. Fenbiesing. Discriminative mind. Intuitive wisdom goes beyond the world of the senses and intellect, which are characterized by dualism. See? Duality. Right and wrong, good and bad. In the sense that where there is an observer, there is something to observe. Where there is an experiencer, there is something to be experienced. That's why Krishnamurti said none. The observer is the observed. There is no experiencer and the experience. It's just one or the same thing. Where there is the seer, there is something to see. No, the Buddha said no. There is no one to see. It's just the consciousness that arises, anasana. Intuitive wisdom is an integrate principle. Intuitive wisdom is an integrating principle which perceives the whole instead of the being distracted by the part. It is by prajna or wisdom that everything, phenomena and noumena, is observed from the standpoint of totality. Means when you see complete the reality, you are not deluded. Thus acquiring a new meaning. Hence the Surangama Sutta said, Lengen Jing, On the tip of a hair, there stands a magnificent monastery dedicated to the Buddha. While residing in a grain of dust, one is able to set the great Dharma wheel in motion. So when you understand, they are the same. The other shore or prajna or paramita means the perfect peace of mind and spiritual freedom that is achieved when one's mentality transcends the world of duality or relativity to identify itself with the ultimate reality. The totality in which all discrimination and distinction between oneself and others, past, present and future, worldly and transcendental, saintly and earthly, life and death, mind and matter, construction and destruction, the absolute and the relative, the negative and the affirmative, the ignorant and the wisdom and so forth, they are all eliminated. That's why no more duality. That's the sutta say. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no activity of mind or cognition, perception, no formation or no consciousness. No eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no mind. No sight, no sound, no smell, no taste, object of touch or dhamma. No feel or vision, up to including no mind, no feel of mind consciousness. This is the state of mind in which the experiencer is one with the experience. Thus enjoying the perfect freedom from the obstruction of mind, matter and dhamma. It is the state of mind of the bodhisattva and the enlightened being, who has only a short way to go before attaining the final goal of Buddhahood. Thus the sutta said, the bodhisattva, through reliance on prajna paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream, thinking far behind. Ultimately, nibbana. So we finish introduction to today faster. Because not much Dhamma there except these last two pages. Then next week we can continue introduction 3. After that we will start the proper Heart Sutta. Okay, you can take a break. Then after, before we start, you got any question you can ask. Okay, then we continue with the second session. If you don't make mistake, you cannot learn. Everything comes about through learning. The learning is life itself. It is only through life that create the condition for things to arise. Then when it arises, if we don't have the wisdom, that's why we act wrongly. The Buddha said, this is the Dhamma. You will see the noble truth there. When you have delusion, what happens? You attach and cling to this form and mind. Then you deludedly grasp and say, this is me, this is I. Because of that, you ask, what happened when I do that? When I believe it's me, I have a problem, isn't it? Because this body and mind will react. If this body is me, I worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. Understand that? There is a tendency there. So, depending on your wisdom and your understanding, when you cannot transcend this, you will subject yourself to all this delusion and it will condition your suffering. That's why you always have fear, worry, anxiety. But now you have heard the Dhamma. Understand that? So how to apply? Like you said, you want to apply in life, in real life. How can I apply? You cannot just say, hey, Brother Teo, say this is not real, not me, so I don't care. There is no wisdom. You must understand why it is not me. Then only the mind know how to act. Understand? In fact, I went and share and teach. I come to realize a lot of people got the Buddha Dharma wrong. They become like, they don't know how to act. They keep on asking me the same question. When I tell them, accept things as they are. You know what they tell me? Some of this lady, the husband, like outside got affair. Then got problem. You mean you ask me to accept things as they are? Let them do what they like? They react like that. So I have to explain. Accepting as they are means what? You accept him for what he is. Understand? He is responsible for his own karma. What I mean is, at this moment, this is the reality. He, because of delusion, lust, the evil root, the greed, and the selfishness, did all this. That is karmic, but nothing to do with you, understand? But that for my mind, through delusion, the evil root, commit all those things. So when you don't react, means what? You accept the reality of the moment. You see things as they are. You have right view. He is what he is. I am what I am. I got two choices. If I react, I suffer. I become miserable. If I accept, I don't react, I become peaceful. Understand? Then I act. Understand? You still attend to the situation. You still act. Doesn't mean you don't do anything. Understand? Let things be doesn't mean that let him do what he like. Then they go and quote me wrong. Brother Teo say, let things be. Well, I don't care the hell with him. He like to do what. Like. This is not the Dhamma, understand? No. Let things be means have the wisdom to see things as they are. The reality. At this moment, nothing can change, understand? He, through his delusion, has decided to do all those things. And this all done. Cannot be reversed, understand? No. So it's the reality. If I don't accept, I want things my way, what happened? I suffer. This is wisdom. So when you have wisdom, you don't simply quote me. That's why I said, never quote Brother Teo. Only say, he shared the understanding with us. Understand? You quote me, I get into trouble. You say the right word. Understand? Brother Teo say, let things be. See things as they are, or accept them for what they are. I will get into trouble because you misinterpret what I say. You quote the right word, but you don't understand the Dhamma. You see, let things be, the meaning is very deep, very profound. Let things be means the reality is like that. I accept that I am peaceful. I don't get angry, I don't become fearful, I don't get jealous, I don't react. Then I have this clarity of mind. And then I act. How must I act? The Buddha's advice is what? The Noble Eightfold Path. Yeah? If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, this is the right action. It will bring about cessation of all suffering. So what is Noble Eightfold Path? Right view. Right view in regards to the law of karma. He has his karma, I have my karma. I take care of my karma. His karma, I cannot do anything. Understand? Unless I want to help him. Yeah. So if I take care of my karma, means what? I have right view. I don't want to create wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. So that I don't create some more negative karma. So that I know how to free my mind. I will talk to him nicely. What I want is a solution, isn't it? Amicable solution to that relationship is that he is what he is, I accept. But the reality is I must resolve this amicably, understand? So that my life still go on, so that I am still happy, so that I still have my children. He may want to divorce me or separate from me, but no problem. Because he is what he is. I accept him for what he is, and whatever he do, he responsible for it. I accept. That is the reality. And then, I am free. I don't have to hate him. No more evil root. I don't have to get angry with him. Then I resolve it amicably. Then I say, okay, very good. Since you have decided, I think you can do what you want. I give you the freedom, the free will. But can we resolve this amicably? You are still the father. If I need you to help, look after, you come back and look after. Since you want this divorce, if you can, I need you to give me this house so that I can have a place to stay. Then every month, if you can, you give me so much allowance. But don't divorce, understand? That is your triumph card. That is your very powerful card. As long as you don't divorce, you are still the legal wife. Then the man, the other lady got no position. Somehow they will quarrel and leave. You don't have to get angry with them. Understand? Talk to him nicely. If I have said anything wrong in the past, if I make you feel bad, I'm sorry. When you start to change, you have Noble Eightfold Path. When your speech are pleasant, gentle, and good speeches that lead to harmony, love, and understanding, I tell you, if your husband don't know how to come back for you, he is stupid. He stand to lose. A person who has the Noble Eightfold Path is so beautiful. their speech are all right, gentle, pleasant, and understanding good speeches, then all their actions are free of evil. They have a lot of kindness, goodness, generosity. Understand not? They help people. So, then all their thoughts are wholesome. No more of the evil root of anger, hatred. No more. So when you have such a mind, you got no more problem. So, you are free. That's why the basic understanding of the teaching can free you already. But human beings' problem is they think they know. Then they apply wrongly. So slowly, slowly, when you understand, you will start to apply based on what you understand. And if you truly understand, very fast, the application all will fall into place. But when you don't make it a point to really study the Buddha Dharma, meditate and understand, you only want to think. You think you can understand. Then you try to apply. No meaning. So, like I said, meditation is not follow instruction. But you say this, I do. No point. You must understand what I say. That's why I teach differently. I teach you to do things that you understand. I explain to you first why you bow, why you pay respect, to develop the spiritual faculty, to do away with the... Oh, can we have the other bot? Oh, didn't bring, never mind. The five hindrance of mind. Understand? If you understand the hindrance of mind are the thing that hinders you from entering the meditative state of peace and calm, then you know these are the one I must be very, very aware. Whenever they arise, I must abandon it. And how to abandon it? I must develop the spiritual faculty, the faith, the virya, the sati. That's why I cultivate. Understand? That's why I develop the faith in the Buddha and the Dhamma and his teaching. And this is how you start. And when you start to do, the wisdom will come. You don't be like normal people, too eager to apply. Before you understand, how can you apply? It's like anything you do, badminton, chess, or what. You haven't even understood how to play chess or badminton. Racket also haven't buy, haven't trained yourself. You straight away want to go and challenge people. You sure lose one, I tell you. Understand? You want to apply. Train yourself first. Understand? When you train yourself, then you become skillful. That's why I like chess. After you train, you go and play. If you meet a very weak one, lousy one, then you beat him. Then you think you're very good. And next day you meet a better one, then you realize you are so behind. There are people who are better than you. Then you tend to challenge those who are better than you. That you learn from them, understand not? The one weaker than you, you cannot learn. That's why you must look for the teacher who can train you, who can teach you. And you will know. Because you play with him, you will know. What he said, you cannot understand one. He has gone beyond. So because of that, you know you can learn. That's why when you observe chess, you know. A good player, very fast. How they kill your move, you don't even know. But they can see so many steps ahead. They know this player finished already, checkmate. So when you have the wisdom and the understanding, it's the same. When I look at somebody, I know this one will suffer because he doesn't develop the wisdom yet. The evil root are so strong. Sakayaditi is so strong. It's like chess. I can see, checkmate already. So when you develop the cultivation and the wisdom, this is what you must do. Be patient. Cultivate. Then the understanding will come. And then, don't worry about how to apply. You will know how to apply. When you are skillful and good, you know, isn't it? Like badminton or chess. You don't have to lie to yourself. When you can't even serve the shuttlecock properly, you want to play and challenge another player with the game. No, cannot. You train first. That's why develop the cultivation. Do the bowing. Pay the respect, develop the spiritual faculty, then meditate. Step by step, the day will come. When you are sincere, the mind will show forth the way. Sincerity will show forth the way, no other way. You have to be very committed, very sincere, and this must be done with a lot of understanding. Otherwise, you cannot realize what you want. Everything you do, you must be sincere. You must persevere, and you must really, really work towards it. That's a diligence. You must have the faith, the virya to do it. Okay, we can start the meditation. So the topic is relevant, so it's okay. Because she asked a very good question, is it, how can we apply what we have learned? Because she said, I teach, like this Heart Sutta say, emptiness, the whole teaching center on emptiness, is it? But emptiness got many levels, like she understand. So if we are not at that level, we cannot apply. So how can we apply, is it? Based on our understanding, which is a very good question. So I told her, don't be too eager to apply. Train first. Understand? Develop your understanding first. If you have not developed that understanding, you cannot apply. Understand? Remember, just train. Read up. Find out. Then practice. Train. Badminton also same. Swimming also same. Anything you do in life is the same. You must develop the training. Then go into life, try it, experience it. Your career also same. How you climb up the career path and ladder, all this you will understand. Okay, since today everybody is here before, we can just start the meditation. Okay, always remember, relax your body and mind, free your mind, tell your mind, if the thought come later, after the meditation I deal with it. Then the thought will disappear. Understand? If you try to make it disappear, it won't go. You talk to him. Okay. He say, okay. Have mercy on me. I want to meditate. This next 1 hour or so. Please do not disturb me. I will attend to you after the meditation. Then the thought become your friend. So don't have to fight them. Accept them for what they are. Silence your mind and just train. Every time the thought come, find out what thought is it. It's always one of the hindrance of mind. Like and dislike, sensual desire and evil. The first two very common. Or if not fearful thought, restless thought. The fourth hindrance of mind. Then when you are not sure, there is doubt. All these, they are the probable hindrance that disturb you. So when they come, you apply the appropriate mental factor, spiritual faculty to counter. So first, train your mind. Develop the calm mind through devotional practice, the puja. Then after that, you can use the mind sweeping method to train it further. Then you radiate metta in love. So that the composed mind, the calm mind with metta is more conducive to meditate. So all these are skillful means to train the mind. Then after that, you use anapanasati or any object of meditation you are familiar with to anchor the mind, to train the mind. Then once you have this ability, the mind will stay with the object of meditation. It will not run. That is the trained mind. After it's trained, use it to meditate. Use that mind to be aware of everything that is going on within your sense door. Then you just let go. Calm your mind down. Continue to relax. Then allow the silent mind to develop until it's more and more stable. Initially, you will counter a lot of thoughts, a lot of disturbances. The sense door keep on being triggered on. Then you see how you react. Here is very good condition to cultivate because the traffic, everything is very conducive. So if you silence your mind, your consciousness actually keep on arising. Not until you have wisdom, you cannot cope with them. Don't force your mind. Relax, train your mind, then after that, allow it to settle down. Then meditate. Okay, I will off the light. I will off the light. Then you all can meditate. I will ring the bell. After maybe today we can meditate longer. I give you half an hour. Half an hour. you can use the mind sweeping method if you want to. The mind sweeping method is very useful. Relax body and mind, make sure back bone straight. Then after that, you feel your forehead. You just feel. Relax every part. Wherever you feel got any tension, tightness or stress within, you just let go of it. Then you sweep it down to eye muscle, facial muscle, neck, heart. You feel the heartbeat, everything. Then your stomach, your abdomen, buttock, leg, then sweep it backward. Once you train, this mind will listen to you. Wherever you want it to be, it will stay there. Then you'll find it more conducive to radiate loving kindness and metta to yourself, to calm it down and to make the mind more peaceful. You can radiate. You can just recite, may this body and mind of mine be well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within, the joy within. Then you can radiate further. You say, may this body and mind of mine to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May it to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. Then you can radiate this love and metta towards someone you love, your loved ones. Then learn to smile, radiate a smile. When you can smile, there is joy, there is happiness, there is less tension and stress in you. Radiate a smile, relax your face, be happy, be cheerful, be relaxed. Meditation is not forcing yourself, just relax and aware, develop the mindfulness within. Feel everything for what it is. Don't react, just remain silent and peaceful. Okay, I will leave it to you. Then after that, I will ring the bell.
Okay. For those who are still under meditating, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Just relax yourself. Try to maintain whatever peace, whatever calmness, and whatever inner awareness that you have developed. Then we will continue with the second session. For those who still want to continue meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Okay, so for this second session, as before, you can make use of it to report your meditation. At the same time, you can also ask me any question with regards to the meditation, the Buddha's teaching, and how you can apply what you have learned here in the Buddha Dharma to allow you to understand life, make use of it so that you can become a better person, to free yourself from all whatever apparent misery or suffering or unhappiness. Okay. Anybody who wants to report? You want to report? Yeah. How's your meditation? It's okay, you just report exactly how you do it. Whatever happened, you just have to report it. No problem. Then I will know how to advise you. How did you start just now? Are you able to train your mind? Get hold of the mic. Thank you.
I start by just relax the physical
body and mind.
I always I use a few things. If my mind moves, wanders, then I will. There's a few things I use. Sometimes I say, okay, I'm the blue sky.
Okay.
I use the blue sky.
Okay.
Once in a while, and if that doesn't work, sometimes I just actually like stare at the word silent.
Oh, okay. Did you try the mind sweeping method?
Sorry?
The mind sweeping method, did you try?
How is the mind sweeping method?
Oh, you haven't done it before?
No.
Oh, you mean first time you're doing the meditation?
Yeah, in this
session. No, the mind sweeping method is like that. Like I said, you silence your mind. Then you relax your body and mind. Then you close your eye. You feel your forehead. When you feel your forehead, you don't think, understand or not? Then after that, if there's any tightness, any tension, or any stress within, you just relax every part of it. When your mind got something to do, it will stay there. Understand? So you sweep it from the forehead. After you finish, you go to your eye muscle, facial muscle.
You taught us actually.
Then you radiate loving kindness to yourself. Develop the joy within. Learn to smile. When you can smile, you are happy. You have joy. When you have joy, you are relaxed. That's why you no need to actually struggle. When you are relaxed, you become at peace easily. So you learn to smile, radiate a radiant smile. Then you radiate love and metta towards yourself. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy. You have to feel the well-being and the happiness. So when you can feel it, there is a lot of what they call calmness inside you. Because the composed mind, the happy mind, the mind that has the well-being and happiness is different, very peaceful and very calm.
Yes, I did that, but I haven't feel it yet.
That's why you have to feel it. You don't just verbalize, like parroting. You must feel it. You must feel the well-being and the happiness within. When you say, may I, you feel your being, your entire being. be well and happy, feel the well-being and the happiness inside. That's how you do it. Then after that, you move it further. You say, may this body and mind of mine be free from all suffering. You feel that there is no suffering, understand? Both physical and mental suffering. You have to feel it.
I have not gone into the feeling. I feel it a little bit, but not as deep as, you know. Yes.
What about the thought? Do you have any wandering thought, hindrance and all those things?
Much less today.
Good.
Much less today. So like you taught us, so I come back, you know, acknowledge it, and then say,
yes,
okay, I want to meditate again.
You don't force it, you don't fight it. You just acknowledge it as untrained mind, think a lot, it's okay. So talk to the mind, I will think about it later. Then in the meantime, allow me to have the space to meditate. Have pity on this form of mind. Then you just relax and go back to your whatever meditation object. You are using the breathing or what? Or your own? What do you use?
I tried the breathing before, but I find it very...
Never mind. You don't have to use the breathing. What are the objects of meditation that you are familiar with?
I just like to see the blue skies, actually.
Oh, okay. Do you visualize it in your mind?
Sorry?
You visualize it in your mind.
Yes, yes.
Then what happened? Do you become peaceful?
I'm not yet there, I think.
Oh, okay. You see, to train your mind, you can use any skillful means. But the danger of visualizing, if it doesn't have any effect, visualizing may not work. Initially, it may work because you feel more calm and more peaceful, like the blue sky, very serene. So you are like using an auto-suggestion to the mind. You feel peaceful because it's a blue, clear sky. So the visualization initially can help. But after a while, it loses its effect. So a lot of people use auto-suggestion through music, through tapes and all those things. So they are led into this peace and calmness, especially those who are trained under other type of meditation. I think some of this civil mind control or what, they are being auto-suggest into this calm state. Initially, it will work, it will help, it help a lot. But then our meditation is not only training the mind to become peaceful. We go beyond that. So whatever skillful means is to allow us to have this ability to allow our mind to settle down so that it is not heedlessly thinking and lost in the thought process. So that it can be with the moment silent. And aware within. But for most people, they can't because the hindrance of minds always arise. The sensual desire, the ill will, the sleepiness, the thinking, the restlessness, and the doubt, they are always there. So the Buddha has a few skillful means or what they call advice for the monks and the meditator. He got a few contemplation. He taught Ananda seven things. One of them is develop the meditation on loving kindness. When you can develop metta, your anger, hatred will go, understand? It's very useful. If that can help you become more calm and more peaceful, the Buddha say, use it. Then develop the training of the mind to be compassionate. Means train the mind, develop the meditation on compassion so that it will do away with cruelty and all those things. Then there is also the other one, contemplate on the body. on the body is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. To develop the understanding of the reality of this form. Then they also actually put special emphasis on contemplation on death. So that you have the urgency to cultivate, to meditate, so that you will not be neglecting your spiritual practice and cultivation, your spiritual life. Then also, Ananda has been told to develop the meditation on impermanence. So there are various ways to train the mind. But most common one is, he said, Anapanasati, because this is the breathing that everybody has. It continuously arises in you. So you can just silence your mind and feel it. You can give it a try. Don't force yourself. Initially, it's very difficult. We are like learning how to ride a bicycle. You will fall because you are not used to it. But be patient. Just relax and train. Feel. Breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. If it gets distracted, you bring it back. Distracted, bring it back. After a while, it will calm down. This way is a lot better than auto-suggestion and visualizing. Because visualizing is, most of the time, it is an image you create, understand? An image is part of sankhara, thought process. Unless you use the 40 meditation object that the Hindu practice use, the kasina and all those things, they visualize and they lock their mind in. In that way, you can also initially train the mind to be calm and peaceful. But these are one-pointedness meditation. These are concentration. You lock your mind into one-pointedness, ekagata, then force it into that awareness so that you got no thought. But that is a conditioned state, understand? You are forcing the mind to just aware, or you apply the thought onto that object of meditation. Let's say earth element, water element, or light, certain type of light. Then they continue to develop until it become a image, a sign. Then from there they continue to focus. Then it develop concentration. That's why nimitta, everything arise. Then from there they develop the jhanas and all those things. This is the other way that the monk during the Buddha's time, the Hindu practices, they do a lot. You can try it. But then the moment you are in it, you need to understand that this is not the ultimate meditation. Because the Buddha went through, under Alara and Udaka, he did this, what they call one-pointedness meditation. He developed all the jhana until the 7th and the 8th jhana. He actually went through all of the teachers that have taught him. But he realized he is yet to be enlightened. He still cannot free his mind. He still has this, what they call, suffering in his mind. And he knows he cannot free. When he is in this jhana, he's like he is free. But the moment he come out of it, when he go back to life, he still suffer. That's why he knew he has not become enlightened yet. So he went alone. Then he investigate and search for himself. Finally, he realized he cannot torture or torment his body too severely. That time, it was a commonly believed practice at that time. If you practice austerity, means you practice very severe austerity on your body, then you can become enlightened easier and faster, because the more austere you are means the more serious you are. There is also this delusion part. If you torture your body enough, means you pay back your karma. After you have paid back all, they say you become enlightened. So that is also part of the delusion.
So the Buddha realized it cannot continue this way because it doesn't bring about result. So that's why he revert back to eating food. Make sure he got a proper help so that his body can sustain his practice, so that his body can be in a proper state and condition to help him in the meditation. This come about because he remember when he was young, in one of the harvesting season as a child, he was able to go into that very, very fantastic mind state. He levitated. There was so much joy, radiant and brightness. He was so serene and so calm on his own. He never think, he never developed any concentration at all. That time he was very well fed as a child. He got no problem. So he remembered that. Then he said, maybe I must eat and be like that state. No worry, nothing. Then he just silent his mind. Then also because his past cultivation, I think he connected. Then he know the time has come. This is the way to freedom. But he need to wait for one thing to happen. Sujata to offer the milk rice. That's why when Sujata offer the milk rice, he like no, the time has come. That's why he make that vow. He said, if he is not enlightened after he sit, he will not arise from that seat. Not even until his body, the flesh, the blood all dry up, he will not arise from the seat. But before he made the aspiration, he saw the sign. It was mentioned in the sutta. After Sujata offered the empty bowl that he, after he finished his food, he made an aspiration, is it? If I were to become enlightened soon, let this bowl float upstream. Then he threw the bowl into the river. The bowl really went upstream. That's why he knew he has this destiny, the karma, the inheritance. That's why after that he made the aspiration to meditate and wants to make sure he is enlightened. And that night, he became the Sammasambuddha. And the meditation that he developed, not the one-pointedness, he developed wisdom, insight into the reality of all phenomena. He sees the dependent origination, how the mind functions, how it conditions each other to develop the mind state, the 12 link. Then he start to see with wisdom all of the Dhamma that he has never realized yet. The impermanence, the suffering state and the non-self. Then after that, not long, he starts to have the ability to see how living beings take birth through their karma. What type of being through their karma, what happened to them. That's why all this come back to him. And his realization of all this is because his past perfection. He cultivated so long. And he can look back. One life, two life, three life, until millions of life. All the way back until the first thought of ignorance. How he wander in samsara. Like just now the Heart Sutta. Consciousness created the world, the continent, the star and the universe. This is consciousness there. Then the knower, through delusion you think there is a knower to know something there. The knower become the living being, the human being, arise already. This is the one that travel in space and time. That's why the traveler in time is your egoic mind, the delusion that created this form of mind. And this one, through delusion, it gets itself entangled and lost in this universe. So because of that, the Buddha, once he came to know that this five aggregate of form of mind is a culprit, he straight away awakened. Then he told the
he spoke one famous phrase, I think. Because he realized the culprit was ignorant that conditioned craving. He said, it's this craving that built this house. You know what is a house? Our body that housed the consciousness or the mind, the thinking mind or the mundane mind. He said, old house builder. Who is the house builder? Your karma is there. Born of ignorance or delusion, it conditioned craving. And craving is the house builder. So he said, O house builder, you shall build no house for me anymore. Means no more rebirth. For thy rafter has been shattered. The ridge pole has been shattered. So the analogy is very good, is it? Means he knew what this house is all about. How it come to be the one that responsible for this. So he called it the house builder. Then he said, thy ridge pole has been shattered. Means, you know, if you are building a house, there is a ridge pole that hold all the roof truss together. Understand not? You have to nail all the rafter to the ridge pole. Once this is shattered, all the rafter will collapse. That's why your house will be gone. So he said, thy ridge pole and all the rafter has been shattered. You shall build no more house. That's why he became enlightened. No more birth. So that wisdom part is very important. So in meditation, we have to ask ourselves, what is it that we want? It's up to us, of course. How you want to train your mind? You can use a visualization like you use the bright blue sky. Or you can use the one-pointedness or auto-suggestion or any object of meditation. But always remember, these are only initial skillful means to train the mind. Once the mind is trained, like the Buddha, he realized, you have to use it to cultivate the wisdom or the understanding. That is the real meditation. If wisdom doesn't come to be, if you don't use it to be aware of what you do in life, your action, speech and thought process, the mental intention behind, what type of mental intention condition what type of action, then you start to see the teaching manifesting. When the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion is there, it will condition suffering. Then you realize Dhammapada verse 1 is true. Then if there is no more evil roots, when you have wholesomeness, goodness, you realize that there is no more suffering. Like the Buddha said, if you expect and think with a pure mind, a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. Then you put to test, you investigate into it through your meditation, through your heedfulness. Then you realize this is so beautiful. When I don't have anger, hatred, selfishness and delusion, I'm so happy, so peaceful. I can accept the reality of the moment so easily. And my mind is so calm, so relaxed, so aware and peaceful. Then you realize, hey, this is how I can free my mind. Then you start to see at your sense door, the moment of hearing, the moment of seeing, the moment of thought process, how upon contact consciousness come to be. Then how when consciousness arrives, the mind starts to move, stir. How it conditions the pure feeling into craving. How craving become grasping. How it conditions you into becoming. Then how you take birth, transgression. Then how the whole mess of suffering comes to be. Then you start to see the Four Noble Truths. Hey, this is suffering. The cause is through delusion I grasp and cling. I react, I stir my mind. That's why feeling become craving. Then the third noble truth the Buddha taught, suffering need not be. When I have wisdom, I don't have to suffer.
cessation of suffering in the here and the now is possible, Nibbana can be realized. Then I apply the mind. I investigate. I silence my mind. It can cease. Then I realize, hey, the anger and the emotion that arise just now was due to my own delusion that stirred. I hear something or I see something and I think of something. I react. Then this one stir. Then anger come to be. Anger is not me. It's condition arising. Then you realize what the Buddha meant by, you don't have to do anything because this is not you. You just silence your mind. The moment you silence, you realize, hey, the original state of mind before the stirring is already peaceful and calm. So meditation is to train the mind to be silent. Then you realize, hey, no need to do anything. The original state of mind is stillness, silent. So if I don't stir, I don't react, if I don't have delusion, I'm already peaceful. I don't have to force myself to be peaceful. I don't have to make myself peaceful. All this you start to see. Then you realize, the mind when it's just silent and let things be, the activity slow down. The mind does not stir. The emotion, the anger was start to slow down. Then finally it ceased to be. Then you will remember what Krishnamurti said. The very flowering of that emotion or that thought is the very ending of that thought. You allow it to flower. The anger, the emotion, you allow it to flower. That is energy based. If you don't react, don't give it any more mental energy, it will cease to be. That's why every time I meditate last time, whenever I have this emotion or what during the early day, I just silence my mind. You have to go through it. Then I realize the stirring, the reaction inside starts to slow down. Then all finally become very quiet, very peaceful, and very still. Then I realize, hey, I don't have to do anything. I just have to silence my mind. I just have to accept the reality of the moment. Because this is all condition arising, causal phenomena. If I don't have delusion, I will not react. I will be at peace. Then I will not stir the mind. Then the egoic mind got no more power. Thought got no more power. Then you start to see the five aggregates are empty. It's only a thought. Feeling is just a feeling. It has got no power over you. It come and it go. Then why do you react to it? Why do you allow it to stir? So all this is wisdom. And when they arise, you start to see clearly the impermanent characteristic, the suffering state when you grasp and cling, and the empty nature. That's how wisdom come to be and you're finally free. This is the meditation that the Buddha want you to develop. Means after you train your mind, just silence your mind. You must be aware and heedful. The mind that is trained is silent, heedful, not in concentration. Always remember that. If your silence and stillness is conditioned by a concentration, by holding on to something, and prevent the thought from arising, means true one-pointedness, or what they call jhana and all those things, then you have to be careful. You are still within the field of thought. You are still trapped inside there. Because you actually suppress it. Prevent it from arising. Of course, it can have its, what they call power. Like psychic. It can bring about psychic ability to read mind, to do all those things. And a lot of people are attracted to it. Thinking that this is what the Dhamma is. Because it is so wonderful, so powerful, can make you do so many things. But it can never free you from birth and death. Understand or not? Finally, you still got to die. Understand or not? So this is not what you are looking for. The Buddha went through all those things. He can also read mind and do all those things. He can levitate and do all. But that is not what he is looking for. He is looking for an answer to birth, old age, sickness and death. He wants to transcend birth and death. So the whole training is so different. So when you understand, you will know how to develop the meditation accordingly. That's why you reflect and contemplate. What is the fourth noble truth? Noble Eightfold Path. This is the meditation. Then you give it a try. If you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, does it bring about the cessation of all suffering? Does it bring about enlightenment? Now you will know. Because what is Noble Eightfold Path? Right thought, right speech, right action, no negativity, born of right view. Then right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. And all this is the advice of the Buddha. All evil you have to avoid, do good. That's what Noble Eightfold Path is all about. Purify your mind. So that's why when you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, you follow completely the advice of the Buddha. And that is how you can become free from all suffering, enlightened. So Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation. Whatever you do in the name of meditation, you cannot train your mind and finally come back to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, then it is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. It's as simple as that. Okay, exactly 6 o'clock. Okay, I think we can end. Maybe we continue next Sunday. Then I think there is an announcement. Sister Lee, there is one Sunday they have to go Penang. 25th. So the next Sunday still got one class. 25th is off. They are going to Penang. I think it's the anniversary of their teacher, their master. Transfer of merit. Then after that, we can pay respect and end. Okay. Sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata ca bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakhantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca amehi sampadhan punya sampadhan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Okay, transfer of merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all to be well and happy. Okay, the other one is invoking the blessing for the country and for a righteous government. Devo satukalena sasa sampati hito cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May rain fall in due season. May there be a rich harvest. May the world prosper. And may the government and ruler of the day be righteous. Okay, the last one is your aspiration. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this marriage that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, Sakyamuni, and the teachers.